From Bedford to Cowdersport, Latrobe to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania headed into the Independence Day weekend without a state budget, and there are no signs that a fiscal deal is imminent. David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Stephen Bloom are here with a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And a second missed budget deadline has tarnished Josh Shapiro's reputation as a governor who gets stuff done. And he has State House Democrats to blame. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Should state employees assist in the preparation, planning, and holding of political events at the state capitol and other Commonwealth properties? House Republican leader Brian Cutler thinks they should not. He has introduced legislation to prohibit such activity. Cutler's move comes following his observation that the Department of General Services worked on logistics for Democratic political events. For its part, DGS says it helps with hundreds of events at the Capitol complex without regard for partisan politics. The Pennsylvania School Boards Association, or PSBA, participates in the state pension system, and taxpayers also help subsidize its Social Security obligations. State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill of York County says that as a result of those taxpayer expenditures, the association should be subject to the state's Right to Know Act. The PSBA is part of the state's education establishment. It works not on behalf of taxpayers, but on behalf of school boards. According to the Center Square, the Stand with Israel Act would ban the state treasurer from divesting from Israel or Israeli companies. That ban is supported by current state treasurer Stacey Garrity. It passed the state Senate this past week with strong bipartisan support. The legislation is in reaction to left-wing protesters supporting the terrorist group Hamas. They have been demanding that the Commonwealth divest itself from Israel, which is conducting a war in Gaza in an ongoing effort to secure the release of hostages taken in the October 7th attack. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Lawmakers and Governor Josh Shapiro headed home for the Independence Day holiday without a state budget in place, as once again they have missed the constitutional deadline for passing a new fiscal plan. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation for this Capitol Watch discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Good to be back again, David. Thank you.
Outstanding. And as ever, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
Great to see you. Delighted to be here, David.
Well, we're going to have a good conversation today. I want to welcome everybody to the show. Hope that you're all having a wonderful Independence Day celebration weekend. And well, we're past June 30, which is supposed to be the constitutional deadline for developing the state's general fund budget, one for the upcoming 2024-2025 fiscal year. And as far as we can tell, those discussions are proceeding, but we haven't actually heard anything about what the parameters of the final package might look like.
Right. It seems as if the main players in the negotiation process have been talking with each other. That would be the governor and his team. That would be the Senate Republicans, who have the majority in the Senate, and the House Democrats, who have the majority in the House. Those are the three main parties negotiating a budget deal. And budget deals are large, complex, not a single bill, but actually a whole array of different bills that are related to the budget in one way or another.
Right.
That have to be drafted with precision and then implemented by the formal process of being passed in each chamber, sent to the governor, and ultimately signed. So we're in that process right now. There is talk of sort of a broad framework of agreement between the at least the House Democrats and Senate Republicans, but the details have not been publicly announced, and it's not clear if there's actually an agreement or just sort of an agreement in principle to keep negotiating in good faith. So it's unclear at this point where we're going, but absolutely the budget is late.
Yeah.
It was due June 30th, and we are in we're in a late budget mode now here in Pennsylvania yet again.
Yeah. So, I mean, Rebecca, last time around, we thought we had a deal, and then Governor Shapiro sort of tripped over his own feet, and that threw things into a tizzy for a while. What impact is – I mean, that still looms over this budget process this year, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think so. The governor had expressed support for the
Lifeline
scholarships last year, which is a scholarship that would have gone to children in underperforming schools. And he has expressed support for that. And there was a deal presumably worked out with Senate Republicans at the time. But when the budget actually came up for a vote, the Democrats in the House would not call that vote until the governor promised to strike that and veto
with
that
his line
item.
Veto, yeah.
Right, from the budget. So there was a lot of bad feelings about that, because I think the Senate Republicans had believed the governor, that was the deal that they had struck with him. So
yeah.
A lot of bad feelings about that. And ultimately, it took until almost the end of the year to work out the entirety of the budget, because there are a lot of bills and a lot of documents and bills that go along with the budget. It's
right.
Not just the budget proper. There's a lot of other things that need to move along with it.
Yeah, the budget is the budget's a spending plan, but
yeah.
Then you have to have legislation that authorizes the expenditure.
Right, sure. And that didn't happen until I think it was November last year in its finality. And if you think about the budget, all of the government spending that comes through Harrisburg, all of the state spending. So if you think about all of the programs throughout the entire Commonwealth, federal and state programs, that money has to be appropriated by the General Assembly. So all of those things that touch every little piece of our lives that have federal or state funding associated with them are part of this budget. So that's why it's a complicated process. And that's why, you know, sort of everything's on the table and you never know what's going to come out of it. And that's why it really takes working together, like Steve said, it takes the parties really rolling up their sleeves and working together. But it also takes some leadership on the part of the governor as the executive to really buckle down and get those parties to the table.
Well, and of course, there are still major issues that people are various interests are working on to try to get them included as part of this budget. I know that Pennsylvania's business community is highly resolved to fix the so-called startup penalty, that Pennsylvania state tax law is out of line with the IRS code and tax law in 48 states as to how it allows businesses to use their recent losses to offset their current and near future tax liability. And so that you have all of the pro-business groups working together to try to get this thing fixed. This is an extreme outlier, and it seems like a pretty common sense sort of thing. So that's we're moving forward on that. And of course, you know, Steve Commonwealth Foundation continues to pursue an escape for kids who are stuck in failing schools through the Lifeline Scholarship.
Right. We've been certainly Lifeline Scholarship has been deeply involved in the negotiations. We're not sure where everything's going to land. We also had another school choice initiative just recently passed the Senate Finance Committee. It creates a refundable tax credit for families' investment in their child's education. So every child who chooses not to attend a public school would get up to – their family would get up to $8,000 in a refundable tax credit that would help them offset their expenses. It's matched up to the actual expenses they incur. So
right.
If the cap is $8,000, but it could be anything less than that they've spent. And so that's another way that we can deliver school choice to parents whose children are stuck in schools that are simply failing year after year. Where the kids are not even proficient in the basics of English and math. This is another way for parents to be empowered, to have the resources necessary
right.
to be able to choose an alternative school setting for their child where that child can thrive rather than just falling by the wayside in a consistently chronically failing school.
Yeah, because that's the – when kids – only option is the local zip code based school that parents don't have the means to, you know, move to a nicer neighborhood that's associated with a better performing school, that they're stuck. And so this is a way to help those low-income people who are in underperforming districts to get their kids a different kind of educational experience that's going to actually benefit them and help those kids to develop the fullness of their potential.
And we're seeing opposition from a multitude of these different school choice expansion ideas. We're seeing the opposition come really from the entrenched education bureaucracy in Pennsylvania, driven in particular by the main teachers unions, whether it's the PSEA or the AFT, which some of the Pennsylvania teachers are part of, but two powerful public sector unions that are resisting change, even though they're watching every day kids go back to these same failing schools and have the same tragic outcomes that they've been having for decades now.
Yeah. And that's also just as an aside that the National Education Association, the PSEA's parent, they're having their national convention in Philadelphia, and that among other things that they're going to be debating a resolution accusing Israel of genocide in its war of survival against the Islamists who committed the massacre on October 7th. So yeah, they've got PSEA and NEA have lots of time to get involved with international affairs, not so much with the actual performance of our schools and the experience that our kids are having in real time.
They're simply trying to preserve a status quo that is serving them well, serving the union leaders quite well, but not helping Pennsylvania students reach their potential.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. So obviously, whenever we're talking about the budget, we're talking about revenues, we're talking about taxes. And that the listeners have heard me say this, I'm going to just say it again because I think that this should be the foundational fact that everything else is based on. We have a structural budget deficit, which means that our mandatory spending is increasing faster than the natural growth of our revenues from the growth of the, you know, expansion of the economy. And Rebecca, I know that you were looking over some of those numbers and what the Independent Fiscal Office was saying about basically about the overall economic health of state government.
Yeah, they came up with some numbers recently that looked at spending over the past – revenues and spending over the past 5 years. And over the course of those 5 years, the general fund revenues in the state grew by 30%, but spending grew by 33%. So we're spending faster than we're bringing money in. So the state's been doing fairly well with tax revenues and other revenues, but we are spending more than we're bringing in. So at the same time, over the course of those 5 years, inflation grew by 22% over the past 5 years, and Pennsylvania's overall revenue went up by 8%, but spending overall went up by 11%.
Steve, the word that comes to mind is unsustainable. And yet somehow this is the same thing that we do year after year, decade after decade. Well, it's like the politicians spend money faster than people can earn it. It suffocates growth and we fall further behind our competitor states.
And we were on a trajectory to actually start achieving some of the goals for financial stability, fiscal stability in the state. In particular, the state's rainy day fund had been replenished with a reasonable amount over the last several years, and that is only to be utilized in cases of economic downturn or other sorts of fiscal emergencies that might hit the state.
Right.
But Governor Shapiro has essentially promoted the concept that, you know what, there's so much money there, we could just spend more.
Mm-hmm.
And already, as you noted, there's a structural deficit situation. Should we start to dip into those reserves and keep spending more, that's going to trigger those deficit situations even more severely.
Right.
And ultimately, There's only one way out of that is you make some very sharp cuts or you raise taxes to pay for it.
Or both.
And we're on a path right now. If the governor would get his way with the budget that he had proposed back in the early part of the year, we'd be accelerating the process of having to face this deficit situation that is going to ultimately, again, cause a tax increase or drastic cuts in spending, which we've seen the legislature typically has no appetite for cutting things.
Correct.
So they're typically going to end up raising taxes, which ultimately drives a vicious cycle that hurts Pennsylvania
and so,
businesses.
I mean, and Steve, you're exactly right about that. And so, you know, my argument would be that with the rainy day fund, with the other reserves that we have beyond that, that the only proper expenditure of those dollars would be on things that actually bend the curve, that move Pennsylvania in a healthier direction overall regarding that structural deficit, which is driven really by demographics, and that we have more and more folks who are retired beyond their earning years, people who themselves often need taxpayer-funded services, and we have not enough of younger folks in their earning years to contribute to the tax base. And so it brings me back to the pro-growth tax change that I mentioned earlier about the way that Pennsylvania handles operating losses. Getting rid of that startup penalty and also giving better treatment to businesses that are cyclical in nature, this is something that can really help us with investments and more economic dynamism, because as it stands, we're out of line with the IRS code and tax law in 48 states. Why would an investor put money in one of the only places in America where you wouldn't be able to apply the fullness of your initial losses against those tax bills when you finally get profitable again?
Right. We're forcing those entrepreneurs who are ready to start a productive business, start to produce goods and services that the public needs and start to provide jobs for people who need good family-sustaining jobs, we're forcing them into a situation where they get punished for that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
all they have to do is cross state lines to set up that business in Ohio or
right.
or West Virginia or whatever other state it may be, and they would not be penalized in that sort of a way.
Right.
So it's just shooting ourselves in the foot
yeah.
over time, multiple – like shooting ourselves in the foot, not just once, but every year, and
again
saying, "Oh my
again.
Gosh, why are we doing so poorly? I'll shoot myself in the foot yet again."
Well, Rebecca, this was one of the things that we were hoping for with the massive investment by Shell in the Pennsylvania petrochemicals facility in Beaver County, that with this engine generating feedstock for manufacturing, that we really expected to attract downstream users who would want to co-locate to have ready access to those feedstocks. And yet it hasn't happened. And I would argue it's because, first of all, because of this operating loss treatment thing, but also that it's the regulatory burden and the delay in permits and the difficulty in complying with the Pennsylvania bureaucratic standards.
Absolutely. All of the above. And I think our listeners know very well that energy, we consider one of our bright points in Pennsylvania. Energy is absolutely a comparative advantage that we have here that almost no other state has compared to Pennsylvania. And we need to be able to take advantage of that. And the package of all the things that we're talking about would help us do that. The regulatory reform, the tax reforms that would help entrepreneurs absolutely would help that. And I think what Steve said a little bit earlier about if we don't get off of this bad trajectory we're on, we're either going to have to substantially increase taxes or have substantial service cuts. And that's absolutely true. But the only third option that we're all talking about here is to grow the economy.
Yes.
And that's what we're trying to talk about. That's exactly where we are, is talking about the strategies. And other states have done these things. They've been proven to work. And we started down this path with the corporate net income tax. When we started cutting that, we had the second highest corporate net income tax in the nation up until a couple of years ago. And we're
right.
starting down the path to reducing
yeah,
that. We need to continue.
We're starting to roll the boulder.
Yes.
That we got it from 9.99% to 8.99%, and then we're down to, I think, starting this new fiscal year, 8.49%. So it's going to be
right.
0.5% until we get down to what's the level? I think it's 6.99%.
I think that's right. Yeah.
And so it'll be better. We'll be middle of the pack. But again, it's a long time between now and then, and a lot of investment decisions will get
already
made.
Already made, that's right.
And so there's an opportunity cost, if you know what I mean. And this mm-hmm. is why we need mm-hmm. our leaders to be thinking dynamically,
yes.
Rather than just the static thinking of, well, I got this much for this program last year, therefore I need to get that same number of dollars for this.
Strategically, like, what is this investment going to buy the Commonwealth? What is it going to lead to?
Correct. Correct, correct. But that's the sort of accountability that in general we have not had. So, I mean, it's you don't want to make predictions, but in terms of what's a reasonable expectation for how things are going to play out. This'll be done in the next couple of weeks probably, right?
That's possible, David, but again, I don't think anyone anticipated that last year's budget was going to be unresolved until December.
Right.
It's entirely conceivable that there will be a falling out between the parties to the negotiations on this particular budget. Since they haven't come out publicly and with detail announce what the plan is going to be, it leads me to believe that the plan is not finished yet, that the cake's not baked, as some people say.
Yeah.
And it's entirely possible that this does roll into August, September, early fall.
Well,
even,
because
and again, looking at last year as a model, these particular parties aren't – the relationship is a bit strained between the three.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And the Senate Republicans in particular felt very burned by the way they were treated in the last cycle. They had what they thought was a deal that then blew up through no fault of their own.
Right.
And felt that they had been betrayed. So they're being very cautious, and rightfully so. They're not going to just take people's words for it. They're going to want to see legislation introduced and passed.
Yeah.
And done so in a timely way, so that the whole budget package gets done this time.
Yeah, and the of course it's an election year that all of the state House members and half of the state senators are up, and that Governor Shapiro himself is supposed to be a featured speaker at the Democratic National Convention. That's August, right?
So
there are lots of irons in the fire. Certainly Pennsylvania continuing to be a bellwether state and a battleground for the race for president, the race for control of the United States Senate, and that's the context in which all these things are occurring.
Yeah, we've been in a cycle here, several election cycles now, where the entire focus of many of these national campaigns is on Pennsylvania.
Right.
Our state, by virtue of its population and its purple nature,
right,
is the swing state.
Yeah.
And so that hectic, intense atmosphere is already present in Pennsylvania. You can see it if you turn on your television or your internet.
Right.
Or look at your phone where you're getting text messages from candidates. Candidates are just descending on Pennsylvania in a way that you can't ignore it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Steve makes a great point when you think about it. I mean, we're the fifth most populous state. You've got California, which is solid for the Democrats, Texas, which is very reliably Republican, Florida, which is solidly Republican, New York, which is solidly Democrat, and now Pennsylvania is the first state when you go down that list that actually is in play for both political parties.
Well, I think being a swing state is we're fortunate, you know, from an economic standpoint. It's bringing in lots of money from political ads this year, that's for sure, and campaigns. But that is not a sustainable way to keep the economy on track here in Pennsylvania.
No kidding. Well, we're running out of time here, but listeners know that we'll be on the scene monitoring all this, and we'll bring you the after-action report next time around. But until then, Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and what you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Okay. And Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The sun dawned over Penn's Woods on the first day of July to find state government once again without a budget. It is the preeminent state constitutional requirement for the legislature to pass and the governor to sign a new budget by June 30th. For the second time in his 2 years in office, Governor Josh Shapiro has signed no budget by the constitutional deadline. To be fair, he cannot sign legislation that has not been passed by the legislature and sent to his desk. But for a governor who claims to, quote, get stuff done, his hands-off approach to budget negotiations is puzzling. Perhaps he is gun-shy after last year blowing up a budget deal that he made with the Republican-controlled state Senate and triggering a months-long budget stalemate. Shapiro frequently mentions that he is the only governor in the country to govern with a divided legislature. Republicans control the Senate, Democrats control the House. That, however, should be seen as an opportunity to exercise executive leadership rather than be used as an excuse for failure. Instead, Shapiro spent considerable time last month RVing around the state to promote his new tourism slogan, thus absenting himself from the Capitol. All of this became significantly more important last week following President Joe Biden's disastrous debate performance. The president's condition was so shocking, even far-left pundits are calling for replacing him on the ticket when Democrats meet for their nominating convention next month. That, of course, raises the question of, if not Biden, then who? Vice President Kamala Harris has approval ratings even lower than those of the president. Her giggling, unserious demeanor reflects the fact that she was placed on the ticket solely as a sacrifice to the identity politics gods at whose feet the left worships. She cannot win in November either, so the backroom Democrat power brokers who will select a replacement will be looking elsewhere. Which brings us back to Josh Shapiro. He is nothing if not ambitious, and his desire to run for president has been thinly veiled. The Democrat Party bench is even thinner, so being governor of a critical battleground state makes Shapiro a contender for either the presidential or vice presidential nomination. But how do you run for president when you can't even get a state budget deal done on time? Last year's budget fiasco was his own fault for breaking a deal with Senate Republicans to fund a very small Lifeline scholarship program to give students in the state's most underperforming schools other education options. Here is Shapiro's real problem. State House Democrats. Democrats hold a razor-thin one-seat majority in the lower chamber. With most of their members representing urban districts, the Democrat caucus has tilted far, far left, and they have used that position to pass a steady stream of messaging bills that stand no chance of being considered in the Senate. Shapiro broke his word on last year's budget deal because House Majority Leader Matt Bradford refused to bring the budget to the floor for a vote unless the governor agreed to line-item veto funding for the Lifeline Scholarship Program. Bradford is controlled by powerful state teacher unions who would rather trap minority students in failing schools than give those kids an opportunity for success. This year's funding for education is again the main sticking point. Democrats, including Shapiro, want to pour billions, billions more into government schools with no accountability for outcomes, while refusing to allocate even a modest amount of funding to give students other options. State coffers are flush with a $14 billion surplus, so Shapiro and House Democrats are pushing for massive increases in state spending without addressing how those higher levels of spending will be sustained when the surplus is gone. The Senate took a different approach, passing a reduction in the state's personal income tax to give taxpayers suffering the effect of over 20% cumulative inflation over the past 3 years some relief. Bradford and House Democrats remain the stumbling block. If the Lifeline Scholarship Program and/or the proposed reduction in state tax rates were brought to the floor for a vote, they would pass, and with bipartisan support, thus clearing the way for passage of the budget. As the leader of his party, it is Shapiro's job to get a budget deal done. He has not. His failure to curb the extremism of State House Democrats is the main reason why. And that is a speed bump, if not a roadblock, on his quest for national office. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WCAT-FM and WHMX-FM in Camp Hill, along with WTYM-AM in Katanning, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, the Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.